Read the case number six, please. Matthew Tanner versus Thomas Walsh.
Nope. It's Moncrief.
Your Honor, I am Matthew Tanner, and that is Thomas Walsh, but I represent Bobby Moncrief, the plaintiff.
I'm sorry. I read the wrong line.
It feels like that sometimes.
Bobby Moncrief and Paul O'Neill. Well, he's no longer there.
I believe he's technically still the Treasury Secretary as of today, so you may want to rule quickly so you don't need to change the name in the case.
We will by the time it comes out.
We're just waiting to do
that.
May it please the Court and Counsel. Summary judgment was inappropriately granted in this case because there is evidence to show that Bobby Moncrief received 1 point shy of a perfect score on a performance appraisal by an official where there is evidence to suggest that the official's review was tainted by racial prejudice, and because it appears all but undisputed that had that official not withdrawn or withheld that point from her on her performance appraisal, she would have received the promotion in question. I know that this court sees a lot of Title VII actions on appeal from grants of summary judgment. This one is unusual in a few respects, not least of which is that it ought to be reversed. Many times this court sees cases with employees who are marginal or problematic, or who at least are seen by their employer as marginal or problematic. That is clearly not the case with Bobby Moncrief. She's been there for more than 20 years. She has been working at the GS-11 level for many, many years. She's been working in the very department where the very job assignment where this promotion would have gone, also for a number of years, something that the eventual selectee, those things cannot be said of him. The other things that makes this case unusual is that while my brief has the blue cover and while I'm assigned to that table, I find myself in the unusual position of urging that a key finding that the district court made should in fact be upheld, and finding myself noting that the ground on which the district court ruled against my client is one that the government has apparently abandoned. I think they've abandoned because the record shows that it was not a correct basis for denying the judgment. The district court found that Christopher Love's statements to one of Ms. Moncrief's colleagues at around the time he prepared her evaluation demonstrated his mindset about racial issues in the appropriate time frame, and that these statements provide at least some evidence to suggest that the appraisal of Ms. Moncrief's performance was tainted by those racial views. However, the district court found, well, there's no necessary connection between what Christopher Love did in the appraisal and what the IRS wound up doing when it awarded the promotion to another employee. I think the district court had it right on the first ground and wrong on the second ground. We pointed out in our papers in the district court that it was undisputed, based on the IRS's own affidavit that they submitted from the official who put together the list, excuse me, the official who made the eventual selection for this promotion, the methodology that he used and the methodology that was used to rank these people show undisputably that had Bobby Moncrief received the all fives on her performance evaluation from Christopher Love, she would have been the person to receive this promotion. This was a key part of the briefing below when the government denied that causal link, and it was a key part of our briefing here, and the government says not a word about it, which I take to be a tacit acknowledgement that they were mistaken below, and that in fact there is no legitimate dispute that had Ms. Moncrief received all fives, she would have been the person who received this promotion. The government now hits on a couple of relatively new points. They indicate that they argue that the statements that were made by Mr. Love were what they occasionally referred to as stray comments that were remote in time from the decision at issue. In fact, Judge Leinenweber was correct to find that the statements were made and reflected Mr. Love's mindset at the time he prepared his evaluation of Ms. Moncrief. And I've I've addressed that in my reply brief, and I hope it's reasonably clear that these statements were made in the heart of the period when he was evaluating Ms. Moncrief for the evaluation that made it into her file. So the notion that these are remote in time is both something that the government waived by never raising it in the district court, and also, has the added disadvantage of not being true. They were not remote in time. They were right in the heart of the issues that we're discussing here. To refer to it as stray comments, I think is just not quite right. We see a lot of cases where there are stray comments. The whole notion of the limited usefulness of stray comments in evaluating a Title VII case is that we know that people sometimes say stupid things. We know that people sometimes say things in the heat of a moment, in a moment of anger. This was not that. This is a man who sat in the workplace, a white man who explained to a black employee his belief that black employees are looking, that black people generally are looking to have things handed to them and that they don't want to do the work to get ahead. Now, I know that this court has reminded us many times that it does not sit as a super personnel board, and I know there might be a temptation to look at this and say, well, who the heck are we to say that she should have had a 5 in this category instead of the 4 that her supervisor gave her? And I would say we don't need to be the super personnel board here, but we do need to evaluate how Rule 56 gets applied to a case like this. You have somebody who has undisputedly made some very troubling comments about his views of blacks in the workplace, has clearly evinced a certain hostility and a sense of anger over his sense that he had to work hard to get it, and the blacks don't want to work hard to get it. They want it handed to them. You have somebody who told the employee at the time he gave her the evaluation, and she says, why didn't I get all 5s? And he says, I can't give you all 5s. Now, you could argue a couple different ways from that, and I'm not suggesting there is only one reasonable conclusion to be reached from that. The government says, well, you could deduce from that what he was really saying is that he couldn't give her a score that she didn't deserve. But I think you could at least equally plausibly conclude that what he was trying to tell her was that he was not allowed to give all 5s to any employee. But in fact,
Moncrief offered any evidence at all to show that the employer actually relied on race in making the decision? Any direct evidence? Please, and if you have it, tell us.
No direct evidence, Your Honor. However, there is powerful evidence that Mr. Love discriminated on the basis of race when he gave her ranking, and it is undisputed that it is that ranking that kept her from getting the promotion at issue.
Was Love the final decision maker?
He was the final decision maker as to her appraisal. He was not the final decision maker as to the promotion. Let me address that for a moment.
Didn't the final decision maker have all these reports before him? And isn't he the ultimate person who did make the decision?
Judge, it is undisputed that what the final decision maker did was to look at a list that had numbers next to it and said, you got a 53, you can have the job. You got a 51, you don't get the job. But we have to take a step back and look at where that 53 and that 51 came from, because let me tell you what happens if we don't. If Bobby Moncrief had filed an EEO complaint based on not getting the 5 in time and workload management, I wouldn't have brought such a case, and if I had, I would have gotten laughed out of court, because clearly the getting a B-plus instead of an A on your report card would not count as an adverse employment action under the precedence of this court. And if you're going to say that, well, the thing that casts the die that's going to keep you from getting the promotion down the road is in itself not actionable, but then once the thing that clearly is an adverse employment action, the failure to get the promotion, once that occurs, we're not going to let you sue for that because Mr. Love passed his paper to somebody else who made a list, who passed his list to somebody else who took a look at the list and said, well, I'm taking Mr. A, whose name is listed first on the list. You cannot allow employers to insulate themselves from discrimination claims by simply passing a piece of paper from one person to another. I believe that was the holding of this court in the Matu Endereg versus Whitefish Bay case that we cite at the end of our reply brief. You do need to look at a decision maker. However, when somebody has undisputedly had the input that really amounts to but-for causation, then it is fair to look at the person that is here, the person in Mr. Love's position.
You're saying that the Love's comments are not direct evidence? Is that what you're...
Your Honor, I believe they are direct evidence that Mr. Love held racial views that are indicative of intentional racial discrimination. However, the reason I gave so easily on the earlier question is that under the holdings of this court, as I understand them, it doesn't count as direct evidence of discrimination for the lawsuit purposes unless it goes directly to the decision. So had Mr. Love said, I will not give Bobby Moncrief all fives because she is black, that would be direct evidence of discrimination. However, if he says, I don't like the way black people are in the workplace because they don't want to do the work and they want it handed to them, as I understand this court's teachings, that does not constitute direct evidence of discrimination. It may not be the rule I would have devised, but it's the one I'm left with. But whether you call it direct or indirect, I think it's powerful evidence. At the very least, I think it's probative evidence. Judge Leinenweber thought it was probative evidence. And it's hard for me to see how you can get around the fact that somebody who said something along these lines at the time in question, how a reasonable finder of fact would fail to conclude that person's evaluation was tainted by racial discrimination. For that reason, I would ask that the court affirm what Judge Leinenweber said with regard to the tainting of the review process in combination with what I believe is the acknowledgement of the government that she would have received the promotion and therefore reverse the decision below. Thank you.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My friend Mr. Tanner. The evidence of racial bias affecting the promotion decision in this case is so close to being non-existent that summary judgment was clearly the right outcome. Now, there are two steps in the plaintiff's case if they're going to win an appeal, and in the district court, they'd have to show that the 1998 performance evaluation was actually tainted by racial bias, and that but for that allegedly tainted performance evaluation, she would have received the promotion at issue. Neither of those steps is supported by the evidence. I'd like to start with the second one because it's a little bit easier, and that is that but for that allegedly tainted promotion or annual evaluation, she would have gotten the job. That's just a theory that's not supported by the evidence. Ms. Moncrief submitted no evidence in the district court that she actually deserved a perfect score on that 1998 evaluation. She submitted no actual evidence that she was outstanding or better than the person who got the job. And this is the crucial thing. In her nearly 20-year career with the IRS, it turns out that she never, ever got perfect fives, a perfect score. And that's from every supervisor she had, black or white, Asian, it doesn't matter. And in order to accept her theory, we'd have to believe that every supervisor she ever had with the IRS was somehow biased against her. So if you eliminate...
This fellow that got the job was, he got the perfect score when he was in grade 9, didn't he?
He got a couple perfect scores, Judge, and what you have...
There seems to be a little doubt about that. You claim that they got two and they only conceded one, I guess.
I think what you have here is an agency that's trying its hardest not to be the subject of a lawsuit. You can see how they tried to eliminate subjective factors as much as possible to the point where the person who gets the numerical scores just puts them in alphabetical order and offers the job to the person who's lowest in the alphabet. I think that's what happened here. In any event, there's no evidence that Ms. Moncrief actually deserved to get a perfect score in that year.
How about the person who did get the score?
I don't think there's any issue.
What did he get the perfect score? What grade was he serving in when he got the perfect score?
He was the same grade as Ms. Moncrief, but I'm not going to defend every...
Well, I thought it was a lower grade, but it got bumped up because
right.
he got promoted,
right, but,
isn't it?
Right, but he was serving in the as a GS-11, the same grade as Ms. Moncrief at the time.
No, but it was an evaluation of his performance in the lower grade, was it not?
That's correct, Judge, but his supervisor could change it if he wanted to, and he didn't. Anyhow, maybe I should go back to the first part of this argument, which is whether or not Ms. Moncrief has shown that her supervisor's evaluation of her was so tainted by racial bias that it should be disregarded. And this is where I think things are really unfortunate, where you can have people of obvious goodwill, a black employee and a white employee talking about issues that touch on race, and then finding out that those conversations, relatively innocent, certainly motivated by goodwill, are going to be used to say that you are a racist. And every evaluation you make is so tainted by racism that it should be disregarded. And if you look at the statements, and I actually encourage the court to read the very few pages in the depositions where the statement is made, you'll see that it's not at all what Ms. Moncrief paints it to be. The statement wasn't made to Ms. Moncrief. It was made to another black coworker of hers. That coworker, Rochelle Christian, can only be sure that it was, or can only remember for sure that it was one conversation. She and Mr. Love usually talked about the scriptures. She said he was a devout Catholic and he knew the scriptures remarkably well, and they would often have discussions about them. And one day, this issue perhaps of affirmative action came up. It's not clear how it came up. But he was talking about his experiences growing up as a child, not about what was going on in the 1990s in his workplace. She said that his comments were not mean-spirited. She was asked, do you think that he's a racist? And she said, oh, no. She just thought he was like a lot of people who didn't fully appreciate the minority experience. And actually, if you read the statements, counsel suggested that Mr. Love said that blacks are looking for a free pass. If you read the exact statement, which is, of course, it's not it's just Ms. Christian's recollection years later of what her friend said, it was that some minorities, when he was a child, were looking for a free pass. Not all, but some. In any event, she even said that this had nothing to do with the present, that he never said anything biased about federal employees, about IRS employees, about employees at all. He was talking about people in his youth, growing up in a very tough neighborhood. And then if you say, okay, well, this guy is such a horrible racist for what he said, let's look at the actual evaluation he did of Ms. Moncrief. He evaluated her on five elements. On four of them, he rated her above successful, above fully successful, all the way at outstanding. He writes a narrative about each one of those elements, and it begins, each one of them begins, Bobby, you have more than exceeded every part or every sub-element of this element. And then he, on one element, the one that's at issue here, he says simply, you exceeded most of the sub-elements. Not all, but most of the sub-elements. He says that apparently there are at least five sub-elements because he said you exceeded A, D, and E. Apparently she didn't exceed B and C. This is just, about as nice or as good an evaluation as you can get, and to say that it's the product of racism is just ridiculous. The other evidence that we have that Mr. Love is a racist is because one evening or weekend, apparently, he spent some of his own free time watching the movie The Tuskegee Airmen about black World War II heroes. I guess he doesn't get any credit for watching the movie, but when he comes to work the next day, he talks to Ms. Moncrief about it, and this is, it's only a few lines of text. We should have put it in our appendix, but it's at record 12, tab 2. And this is what he says. This is Ms. Moncrief speaking. He told me he had seen the movie, and he was talking about how willing the blacks were to fly the plane and do the job. He said they really wanted to do the work. what does Ms. Moncrief respond to that? She says, well, Chris, not all blacks are lazy, as if he said they were. And what does he say in response? Does he take offense? He says, yeah, I know that. You have lazy people in all races. This is just not the kind of evidence that should sustain or get anybody to trial on the allegation that their supervisor is a racist. The comments that you see, the ones that are sometimes referred to as stray comments, the ones that this court talked about in Logan versus Cowtex, Textron or whatever, are really hostile statements. You know, there's somebody talking to a black coworker about a lynching and saying that today that coworker thinks that interracial dating is disgusting. These statements are nothing of the kind, and they really shouldn't be faulted. We shouldn't be telling supervisors or coworkers that they can't have any kind of a conversation that even touches on the issue of race without subjecting yourself to liability, or at least to a trial. In short, there was no evidence to support the claims in this case. The district court was correct to grant summary judgment, and unless the court has any further questions, we ask that you affirm.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. The court will take the case. Your time has expired, sir. The court will take the case under advisement and proceed to